Today on Maine Calling, the experience of Vietnam veterans who are here in Maine. On March 29, 1973, the last U.S. ground troops left Vietnam. 39 years later, in 2012, former President Barack Obama declared March 29th National Vietnam War Veterans Day. It is a day of observance and recognition of the sacrifice of Vietnam veterans and their families. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Here in Maine, there are several events tomorrow and Saturday. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn about those events, and we'll talk with some of those who served and share stories about veterans' experiences during and after the war. Did you or a loved one serve in the Vietnam War? How did it change the trajectory of your life? What do you want others to know and understand about your experience? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible in part by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Maine Health, where care teams provide expert, coordinated care focused on your overall wellness to help you be your healthiest self, mainehealth.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Saturday marks National Vietnam War Veterans Day. So today we will talk about the experience of Vietnam veterans in this day, and we'll also learn about some of the observances here in Maine. Joining me for the hour, Major General Bill Libby, former Adjutant General of the Maine National Guard. Pete Ogden, Director of the Maine Armed Forces Museum, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, and former Director of the Maine Bureau of Veteran Services. And Don Chrétien, Vietnam veteran and author of Hovering in Harm's Way. We invite you to join the conversation. Did you or someone you know serve in Vietnam? Share your thoughts about that service and the impact on you. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Don, I want to start. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
It's Chrétien.
Chrétien. Oh, my goodness. I really got it wrong. I'll get it right for the rest of the program. I want to start by asking all three of you about your service. And I'll start with you, General Libby. How old were you? Were you drafted? Did you sign up? Tell us your story.
Yeah, I was 23 when I went, Jennifer. I graduated from the ROTC program at the University of Maine, went on active duty, and was at Fort Hood, Texas when the call came, and I ended up over there as a 23-year-old captain.
Can you tell us more about your service? What you were doing when you were on the ground, when you were deployed?
I was assigned to the 1st Cavalry Division. I actually requested the 1st Cavalry Division. It was the 1st Air Mobile Division, and I thought it'd be interesting to be involved with the new technology that the division was going to bring to the theater. Within the division, I was assigned to the 1st or 30th Field Artillery Battalion. I was a field artillery guy, had 6 months as a forward observer, actually an air observer and liaison officer, and 6 months as a battery commander.
And how long were you there?
12 months.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you. And Peter Ogden, what about you?
Well, actually, I enlisted. The draft board was chasing me around, so I decided I wanted to be an engineer, so I enlisted to be an Army engineer.
How old are you?
I was 20 when I arrived in Vietnam.
Wow.
I was there from 67, late 67, all of 68, and I went back for it in 69 for another tour. Then my third tour was with 101st Airborne as an engineer, too, on the DMZ and stuff. So my first two times there, I was a construction engineer, and our job was really to build roads. and build base camps and other things for things like that. So I got my engineering experience I was looking for in more ways than one.
And you said when you first went, you were a building engineer. Were you a building engineer for all three tours?
Actually, the first two tours where we did more of the construction kind of stuff. And with 101st, it was more the demolition kind of stuff. Fire bases and things like that. But it was a lot of things that was done totally different. Everything we did was by helicopter with 101st. So,
interesting. Don? Yeah, Don,
yes.
I'll ask you.
Well, I graduated from the University of Maine and Arno in 67. Before the last semester, I had gotten so many credits that I didn't have to be a full-time student my second semester. And I'd been eligible for the draft, so I also enlisted because I had a specific role in mind. I wanted to be a pilot. So I headed for Officers Canada School in Quantico, Virginia, in the Marine Corps in January. Then I went over to Pensacola, Florida, and went through flight training with the Navy. And by December of 1969, I got my orders and went to Vietnam. Was there for a year. And I flew CH-46 helicopters in Vietnam.
Very, very dangerous assignment.
Well, some say that. There was an interesting cartoon in Stars and Stripes while I was there, and there was a picture of a helicopter hovering over a landing zone that was riddled with holes, and a pilot was talking to the co-pilot, and he said, you know, I wish I was down there, wishing I was up here.
Well, Don, you've written a book about your experience, so I want to ask you about that. Tell me about the decision to write about it. Why did you write a book? What is it that you want others to know?
Well, the reason I wrote the book was really as a legacy to my children and grandchildren. I had been quiet for many years, didn't say much until about 1990. And at that time, I got an ominous note on my car. My car had military stickers on it. And it said it thanked me for my service. That was the very first time that I had been thanked for my service. Since then, I've been thanked often by friends and family, and even strangers. But the reason to write the book, it came on me, and I wanted to do this, and it just flowed out of me once I started writing. And I enjoyed it very much. It was very cathartic for me to write that book.
And Don, it's so interesting to me personally that you say you didn't talk about it. My father flew B-52s in the Vietnam War, and he never talked about it. And he's gone now, and so I can't talk to him about it. And I would have loved for him to write a book. But that's not uncommon, is it? It's not uncommon that people don't talk about it.
Not at all. Very common. Some people have had some very bad experiences, and it hurts to talk about it. But I think as well, as I say, it's cathartic for me to talk about it. And hopefully more guys are doing that on a regular basis.
And speaking of talking about it, you're talking about it tomorrow, right?
That's correct. I am doing a session on my experiences in Vietnam at the Maine Military Museum in South Portland at 2:00 tomorrow afternoon.
All right. Well, I'm sure the audience appreciates knowing about that. General Libby, I'll turn back to you. Don talks about something that people who are younger who are listening may not realize what kind of reception you all received when you came back. And I'm wondering, was it the same here in Maine as it was in other parts of the country where Vietnam returning soldiers were treated badly?
I didn't experience that in Maine. As much as some of my contemporaries experienced it in other states, it was a difficult time for the country. The war obviously was the focus of a lot of angst and anger and caused polarization. But once I got back to Maine, I don't think I've really had a negative experience. I do want to pick up on one of the things that Don said about not talking about it. I've got three sons, and I've never sat down with them and had a comprehensive discussion of all my experiences in Vietnam. On the other hand, anytime I get together with guys like Don or Peter, you can't shut any of us up as we talk to each other about our experiences. And I think that's a pretty common condition for all of us who served during that particular period of time.
I wonder, General Libby, if your sons are hesitant to ask. If they
I
feel
think there's a
like,
bit,
go ahead.
I think there's a bit of that, and I think it comes from the fact that I've been silent about it. I haven't been proactive in talking to them about my experiences, and I think they respected that and stayed away from the questions. And as the years dangle on, we talk a little bit more about it. I share with them some of the frustrations that I experienced in a particular period of time, and try to answer the questions. If I was frustrated by my service in Vietnam, why did I spend 43 years in the Army? And that's a more difficult question to answer.
Oh, that was going to be my follow-up question. General Libby, you read my mind. I, again, and I'm not going to talk about my experience the whole time, but my father got out afterwards, and you stayed in and had a very honorable career, as we all know. Did you ever think about changing direction, changing course?
Well, I did. I got off active duty after 10 years and went back to came back to Maine. Was the dean of students at Freiburg Academy, and to be brutally frank with you, I looked at my first paycheck at Freiburg and decided that wasn't going to raise three kids and put them through college, and I needed a part-time job, and I joined the Guard. I got back in an environment where I was very comfortable. So again, surrounded by guys and gals who respected the country, wanted to serve the country, and the rest, as they say, is history. So I did get out, but I didn't get out of anger. I got out because we decided we wanted to raise our three sons in Maine, and but I was drawn back very quickly to the National Guard and another 30 years of service.
Well, speaking of service, Peter Ogden, I've interviewed you so many times over the years, and usually it was as director of the Maine Bureau of Veteran Services. You've dedicated your life to veterans, not only Vietnam veterans, but all veterans. And I know you really strongly want to not just focus on people's time during the war, but who Maine's Vietnam veterans are, who they were before, who they are today.
Well, it's interesting because as I've dealt with veterans, talking to the World War II veterans and their families, or talking to the Korean War veterans, and you learn a lot more about people if you can have a conversation with them. And I would echo what General Libby said is, I stayed in the military too. I did. I retired after 28 years, and my experiences were different than a lot of the Vietnam veterans that came home and just got out of the service and had to deal with not talking to people. We were in the military and we were respected for our service, and we were able to talk to other people who did the same kind of thing. When we talk to veterans, you try to get them to talk about their experiences because it helps them get better. If they just keep it stored inside, they never really get better. But yeah, there's some great people that I've met, Vietnam veterans, and we're talking to one today, General Libby. I've served with him in uniform and out of uniform, and I respect him totally because people come back and they do great things. And I think General Libby may talk a little, can talk a little bit about like Joe Bulis. I think Joe was a Vietnam helicopter pilot general.
Yeah, well, I know he
Yeah.
was a Marine
Yeah.
during Vietnam. I'm not sure that he flew or not.
Well, but he did. Joe did some things for us. For the young veterans coming in Iraq and Afghanistan, I think didn't he support the 133rd Family Program
Oh yeah, he was
down
a
in
great
Portland?
support of the family program and made the first contribution to our tuition program.
And so, I mean, here's a gentleman from Vietnam that wanted to make sure that the newer generation of veterans were not treated the same way we were, and to do that, it was like that. And there's other Vietnam veterans. I mean. Peter Mills is another one that was a Navy veteran from Vietnam, and he came back and actually got his degree as a lawyer, then was in the legislature. Now he runs the Turnpike Authority, and people like that have come back and got on with their lives and things and done great things. I think that's part of it.
Don, what is your story? What did you do afterwards?
Well, once I got out, I got involved in a sales position in California, and I didn't care much for it. So I started looking, and I knew I wanted to get back to Maine, but I had a lot of convincing to do because my wife was from California. We got married out there when I got back, and we visited a couple of times, and she liked it. She was apprehensive about coming back because her family was back there and her friends. But we did get back to Maine. And once I got back to Maine, I got involved in training and development in three or four different corporations and companies. I always enjoyed the training aspect, you know, of flying. And, you know, I did well on that, in that particular role. I ended up after 10 years with National Semiconductor in South Florida in a human resources role. And I retired, and I'm happy I did. Glad of what I accomplished.
Wow. Well, thank you. We are speaking with three Vietnam veterans, and we want to hear from you. As National Vietnam War Veterans Day approaches on Saturday, what are you thinking about? What do you want people to know and understand about your service? You can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to Facebook or Instagram. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. National Vietnam War Veterans Day is this Saturday, and we are talking with veterans about their memories and experiences. With me today, Pete Ogden, formerly the director of the Maine Bureau of Veteran Services, now director of the Maine Armed Forces Museum. He served in both the Army and the National Guard, and served three tours in Vietnam. Don Kration served as a Marine helicopter pilot in Vietnam and is the author of a book called Hovering in Harm's Way. And Major General Bill Libby is a name you probably know, former Adjutant General of the Maine National Guard. His military career began almost six decades ago and includes service in Vietnam, Germany, as well as, of course, the Maine Army National Guard. Share your comments and questions. Send an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now is Joe Armstrong, calling in from Biddeford. Joe, tell us about your organization and what you have planned for Saturday.
Well, good morning, Jennifer. As you stated, my name is Joe Armstrong. I'm the president of Vietnam Veterans of America, Chapter 1044, located at 508 Elm Street in Biddeford. This Saturday, March 29th, is Vietnam Veterans Appreciation Day. And that came about when 2012, when President Obama signed a presidential proclamation designating March 29th as the annual observance of Vietnam War Veterans Day. It's being held every year on March 29th, and each city or town will have their own ceremony. In Biddeford, we're having ours again on Saturday. Unfortunately, it looks like the weather is going to be a little tough, so I believe that the ceremony is going to be moved into the council members' chamber.
Oh dear! Tell us what will happen. What do you do to commemorate this day?
Well, we have organizations that get together, and we have speakers that come on and talk about their experiences and what it means to them as a Vietnam veteran.
And Joe, tell me about your organization. What do you do on a regular basis for Vietnam veterans, and who do you find joins?
Okay, we support veterans, not only Vietnam veterans, but veterans from all previous wars and current wars, and not only that, but their families. If they're in need, they can contact us. We'll try to help them out. We were established originally back in 2010 with only 25 members. In 2015, we moved our chapter to Biddeford at the American Legion Post 26, 508 Elm Street in Biddeford, where we're located today. And today we now have over 183 members in our chapter.
And just because you're in Biddeford doesn't mean you have to live there, right? It's people from the entire region?
This is correct. Originally, there was five chapters of Vietnam Veterans of America in the state of Maine. Unfortunately, that most of them were located north of Augusta, and they have all now closed. Our chapter 1044 is the only chapter in the state of Maine at the present time.
Well, Joe, before I let you go, let me ask you a personal question. What will you be thinking about this weekend and especially Saturday? What do you want others to know and understand about the importance of the day?
Well, I think the first thing I would like everybody to remember is you may not agree with the war, but don't hate the warriors. We had a job to do. We did it to the best of our ability, and I think we did it in an outstanding fashion.
Joe Armstrong, thank you so much for calling in. And one more time, Biddeford, on Saturday, what time and what's the location?
Okay, it'd be 11 a.m., and because of the inclement weather, they're moving it to the city council chambers at City Hall.
All right. Thank you very much for calling in, Joe. Peter Ogden, you're involved in another commemoration tomorrow at the Maine State House, correct?
Yes, at 1 o'clock, the state of Maine, the Bureau of Veterans Services, is hosting another Vietnam Veterans Recognition. For the veterans that come, that are coming, the Vietnam veterans that come, if they haven't received their a state coin or their certificate, they will receive that as part of that. And they also have the lapel pins that they'll the Army has published, put out for us to put on, so they'll be able to get some things from that. I believe the governor will be there to speak, and it's an annual ceremony that goes on, that's been on. It's actually, we started in 2004 on the 50th anniversary of 1964. The Department of Defense has started recognition veterans every year, and 2025 is the last year of this thing, of this ceremony going on on the annual basis. So this is an opportunity to be part of something before it all ends, is to be able to come and do that. So,
all right. And I saw that the town of Camden is having an event on Saturday. Do you happen to know off the top of your head if there are any others? That there was a big breakfast yesterday, but is there anything else that you want people to know about?
Yeah, I really don't know the other ones, but I would just offer the veterans, if they go to the Maine Bureau of Veterans Services website, there is a calendar on there listing all of the things that are happening, so they can probably find some information on there, what's locally going on. The Bureau keeps a pretty good track of all of the ceremonies and things that are happening there.
All right. Well, we're going to go to Caroline, who's calling from York. Hi, Caroline. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I have a book that I wrote when I was working in hospice for quite a few years, and this one particular poem came out of my work with veterans. A veteran's plea. When you come to help me die, just be a witness to me. Don't startle me or get behind me as I sit against the wall in the back of a room. If I choose to tell you things, just listen and be ready to hear whatever it is I say. You have two ears, just one mouth, so I guess you can do twice as much listening as talking. You've got to understand something. We were trained to be wolves, and we acted like wolves. We became wolves. I work every day to keep the wolf down. For years I have been doing this. It's the way I hold on to my dignity. I ask you to allow me that. My wife, she knows. She knows not to try to get inside. She takes notes at lectures, but she doesn't ask any questions. I buried the word Vietnam for 13 years. When the wall was dedicated, I broke open and wept and wept. And the rivers of sadness swept me to the Delta. We were supposed to cover each other, a sector, a back, a life. Bands of brothers jungled, counting on each other. Our goal was to come home alive. 1 year, we said, 1 year. The bond was indelible, but one boy from Wisconsin didn't make it at all. The plan was bungled, killed by friendly fire. I'll be riding my bike and a truck will go by. It's the diesel, the smell of diesel takes me back, all the way back. I have to break so that I don't shatter. who can understand this. They have a name for it that doesn't come close to describing. Look for the ties that bind, that connect, that comfort, that take away the loneliness of triggered memory and savagery. Clearly, I can't forget. I can't lay it aside. Forget the medication. Don't bring me the zombie potions to alleviate my pain, please. Just bring me a comrade in arms.
Caroline, thank you so much for calling and sharing that with us. And I'm wondering if any of our guests today have a response.
That's very inspiring. You know, those words, they strike the chord, obviously, with many of us. And I'm glad she shared it.
And I think, Jennifer, for me, the silence when you asked that question from the three of us is a pretty good indication of the emotions that we feel when we look back on the time that we spent in that country. I say to people all the time, you know, it took our generation 50 years, a 10-part Ken Burns PBS special, to understand how badly this country handled our time in Vietnam. Had administrations from both parties. And, you know, I struggle with those thoughts, not on a daily basis, but often. And as I look at the landscape today, in the hindsight of Iraq, Afghanistan, and what might be next, I think back on my dad's generation, the silent generation, World War II, who had a clear purpose and achieved that purpose in for the greater good of the entire world. We didn't get that feeling coming home. We still don't have it. But I don't regret my service. I'm proud of my service, as I know the two guys on with me here today are.
Caroline, thank you so much for calling. We'll go to Candy, who's calling from New Brunswick in Canada. Hi, Candy. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I'm on the ferry now, but I want to thank you guys for your service. But a few years ago, when Donald Trump was president before, and this still very upsets me tremendously, when he was at Arlington Cemetery, he said they're all losers. All military men are losers, according to him. And I was wondering how you folks feel about that now that he's president again.
Candy, I want to ask you, I know you're calling from Canada. Are you Canadian or are you a U.S. citizen visiting Canada right now?
No, I am a Canadian, but I was born in New Jersey. My dad was born 1907 in Germany. He went to the United States when he was 17. He married my mom in 1936, and I came in 1950. Daddy decided he was going to retire, so he was 55 when he came to Canada. No, 65. Mom was 60. I was 21 when they came to Canada to retire.
All right. Well, Candy, thanks for calling in. Do any of the three of you want to answer Andy's question, or would you rather stay apolitical?
I'm going to be
apolitical. I'm not a political person, but certainly the commander-in-chief, if those comments, in fact, did occur, are very unfortunate.
Candy, thanks for calling. Let's see. We'll go to Susan, who's calling from Freiburg, your old haunt, Bill Libby. Susan, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Jennifer, for your show. To Caroline for that very incredible poem. And most of all, thanks to each and every one of the Vietnam veterans, including the three on the show, for your service. You mentioned at the beginning about how did it affect my life or the caller's life. My father flew the last fixed-wing Air America plane out of Saigon on April 29th, 1975, the day before it fell. He was the chief pilot for Southeast Asia for Air America. So I would like to also honor him. And all veterans still alive, my father is long gone, but literally to this day, we are still fighting in Congress to get benefits for the Air America pilots and their families. Literally to this day, it still has not passed. So I would urge Senator Collins and Senator King to push that if they can. But most of all, I would like to honor the veterans and urge anyone who does not know about the Vietnam War to study it and to visit the wall. I was a volunteer here for a week when the wall, the mobile wall, came to Conway, New Hampshire, and had many moving encounters with Vietnam vets that were at the wall in Conway and also in Washington. Thank you very much to all of you.
Susan, thank you. Peter, something she said made me think, you know, she said her dad's long gone. And I'm wondering, for so long, people like you who worked in the museums, the military museums, worked in historical societies, worked so hard to capture the stories of World War II veterans. But now we're losing Vietnam veterans, Korean and Vietnam War veterans. Are you working to capture their stories?
We are working towards that. Actually, we have in the museum right now, we have the Military Voices of Maine, the panels that have been going around the state. They're here now for people to view in the museum. We're trying to capture the stories. And part of our challenge in the museum, the state legislature, when they named us the state's official military museum in law, they challenged us to tell the story of all Maine veterans. And to tell the story of the Maine veterans, we need to know who they are and to find out that. And whether it's the family telling us about their dad's things or people bringing items of their collection and stuff in and putting in, so we can tell stories about all of our veterans. But we are working with the Voices of Maine people, and we're going to start trying to, in the museum, start taking stories with our veterans that come to visit us, to sit down and have a conversation with the veterans to tell, so they can have tell us about their stories and capture that. We've lost so many of those stories because the veterans are gone without ever saying any word to us, as we've been talking about. So our goal is to be able to solve that problem and fix that, because when they come here, we have great conversations as they look at the stuff we have in the museum, you know, and we talk about the things. Yesterday, Travis Mills, day before yesterday, Travis Mills Foundation brought in some Vietnam veterans and their families, and some high school kids from Connecticut that are that up here working this week with Travis Mills Foundation to do a tour of our museum. And we spent a good hour standing in front of the Vietnam case talking about the stuff in there, and each veteran telling about what was in there that affected him and what he used and things like that. So it was a great experience for those five young girls from Connecticut, high school kids, to listen to the Vietnam veterans tell us about their service and stuff and what they did in Vietnam.
Mm. Susan, thanks for your call. You know, it's interesting, Peter. I'm thinking about my own 23-year-old daughter who just read the book, Kristen Hanna's book, The Women, about nurses who served in Vietnam. And I think that for her generation, and maybe for these young people from Connecticut, they really grew up without knowing much at all. U.S. history didn't usually make it that far into the 20th century. And like you said, their own grandparents may not have talked about it. And I think you're on to something that really is a gap.
And I think part of it is you know, when I was a director of Veterans Services, we did a lot of recognition ceremonies for veterans in Maine. With General Libby, and we started with Governor Baldacci started the program with us. But when I was going around, I'd ask the veterans some questions, and I was amazed how the family members would stand around when I was having this conversation with a veteran, and not even knowing what the veteran did in his service, and then listening to them, I stand there with a mouth open, thinking, "My dad did that," you know, and I think that's part of it, is just as a veteran talking to a veteran, you get those stories. But as a civilian talking to a veteran, you don't often get the story or the real story.
We'll go to Jane calling from VZ. Hi, Jane. Go ahead.
I'm going to get in the sun.
Jane, can you hear me? Oh, hold on. Let me see here.
Yeah.
Jane, there you go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was my fault. Go ahead.
That's okay. First of all, I would like to say I would like to thank all veterans of all wars for being able to risk, you know, the greatest loss for whatever they believe to be national security. I in 78, I worked very hard to end the war in Vietnam. I was never, ever rude or disrespectful to a veteran. But the Vietnam War turned me into a war tax resister and completely changed the trajectory of my life. So that I am now, today at 78, I'm living on $6,000 a year because that's all the Social Security I can get because I never earned more than under federal poverty level, so I wouldn't have the law coming after me, the IRS. So I have other things I'd like to recommend, Martin Luther King's letter from the Birmingham jail, but mostly I would like to hear your guests tell me if they can think of anything or have ever thought of anything or talked of anything that is a better way to end conflict than fighting wars, because honestly, they don't seem to be all that effective.
Jane, thank you for your question. General Libby, this is something I'm sure you've talked about, thought about so much. Oh, you're muted.
Ah, I'm unmuted now.
I'm kidding.
A difficult answer. I think all of us, I look back, my call to service was my dad's generation. I used to sit out to camp and listen to my uncles and my dad talk about the World War II experiences. They never talked about the war. They talked about the guys and the places they were and the things they'd done. And I said, I want a piece of that brotherhood. And I got a 43-year piece of that brotherhood. But I would tell you, as I look back on the history of this country, and frankly, as I look forward on the trajectory that we're headed on right now, I can't disagree with the comments that the caller made. The last war where we had a clear purpose that served humanity was World War II. Career muddled things, Vietnam, as again, I, 50 years, five or six generations of presidents, and what did we leave behind? The way we left Afghanistan and Iraq and the condition those countries are in right now, she's absolutely correct with regard to the final analysis. War is not the answer to our problems. I used to be involved with and I'm having a senior moment now. I can't remember the name of the camp up in Otisfield where they brought the Arab and Israeli kids, the Seeds of Peace camp.
Yep.
Yes. I was involved in that when I was in the Guard on the edges. And I always thought that the future of the world is dependent on adversaries meeting in situations like that, where they can discover that they're just people on the other side of the argument with the same ambitions, the same desires that we have. And there's got to be a way short of war to solve these problems. I couldn't agree more with the comments that the lady has made. Unfortunately, I'm not in a position where I can make some silver bullet proposal on how we end this thing, but war is not the answer. Now, having said that, we need to be prepared as a nation, as most nations are, to defend our way of life. But we got to be careful about what we ask of the people who serve in those organizations at any given time.
Jane, thank you for your call. Thank you, General Libby, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Our topic today, Maine's Vietnam War veterans, their experiences, and what is happening to commemorate them in the next couple days. My guests today all served in the Vietnam War. Don Cration is the author of Hovering in Harm's Way. Major General Bill Libby, former Adjutant General of the Maine National Guard, and Pete Ogden, Director of the Maine Armed Forces Museum. Lots of calls coming in, but you can give us a try. 1-800-399-3566 is the number. 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Daniel calling from Auburn. Hi, Daniel. Go ahead.
Hey, hello. Thank you for taking my call. First, I want to thank all three of you for your service. I'm a veteran, too, and a Gold Star family member. I want to thank General Libby for coming out. 2010, my son died at Fort Hood in a car accident, and he was a proud Mainer, and he came to the funeral that day in Auburn. It was a busy week. I think we had a couple other soldiers pass away, too, in the service that week. But I just want to give a shout-out to him, and I appreciate all the vets out there, no matter what war, and thank you again.
Daniel, I'm so sorry for your loss. General Libby.
It was a difficult time. I spent too many days on the road visiting with families and attending services during that particular point in time. It was rewarding from a personal standpoint. It was heartbreaking to see the families deal with the situation of loss. It's something I look back on with very mixed emotions.
Daniel, thank you. We'll move on. We'll go to Kathleen calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Kathleen. Go ahead.
Hi. I am a Vietnam era war veteran. I was an LPN when I joined the Army in 1968. And I was expecting that they would send me to Vietnam. Well, at that time, they were not allowing women that were enlisted to go to Vietnam. So I ended up having to stay out of the combat zone area. However, being an LPN, they gave me the title of advanced corpsman, and I ended up working in hospitals, receiving injured Vietnam War at that time soldiers back from Vietnam. And our hospital was the first hospital that they would go to that was outside of Vietnam. And I used to get lots of stories. And one story that always stood out in my mind was this fellow named Mike. He was an infantryman, and his story to me was he was running point with a small group of men through some rice paddies that they knew that the Viet Cong were in. And he said that they saw some of the Viet Cong, and they stood up to shoot at them. And he said that one of the Viet Cong was not very far from him. And that fellow stood up and he said, I looked into that the eyes of that soldier. And he said, the kid couldn't have been more than 15 or 16. And he said, I could have taken a shot. But he said, but I didn't. And because he did not take a shot, he ended up getting shot in the hand and losing use of his hand. But I had stories like that all the time from guys coming back from Vietnam. I always wished that I could have gone there, but at that time, they just were not allowing people of my rank, women of my rank, to go there. And as far as coming while I was in the military, and during the Vietnam War, we used to be able to get free flight on commercial airlines. And you talk about how people don't, you know, did not recognize or did not want to see veterans or talk about the war, things like that. And I remember if I wore my uniform, I could get a free flight back to wherever I was going to. But as it turned out, rather than be harassed, I would wear civilian clothes and take my flight so that I could get to where I was going to.
Kathleen, thank you so much for calling and sharing your experiences. We'll move on. We'll go to Scott, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I'm a Blue Water Navy vet. I was on the aircraft carrier, the Ranger, for three tours, three deployments in the Gulf of Tonkin. And I would like to remind people that there are plenty of Vietnam vets who didn't serve on the ground, but who were on carriers, destroyers, oilers, and so forth, and that we, too, in many cases, came into contact with Agent Orange. But I just wanted to remind people that it was not simply boots on the ground there.
Yeah. Scott, thank you. Thank you for calling in. We'll go to Sally, calling from Brunswick. Hi, Sally. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I want to salute all of the veterans that are in your show today. And I was married to a Vietnam veteran who did two tours of duty, and he never spoke to me or the children about his experiences. However, once a month, he would go to the VA. We were living in Pennsylvania at the time. And he would have a monthly session with a psychologist with a room full of brothers who had been in Vietnam. And they opened up. And when the VA tried to do away with that group, every last one of the veterans went to the administration and said, do not close this group. Please leave this open. And they did. They kept it open. I was wondering if there was a support group for veterans, Vietnam veterans, at the VFW or at the VA. And that's what I wanted to know. Thanks.
I bet you Peter Ogden knows the answer.
Yes, there is. There's several. There's actually mixed groups with veterans from different war periods. And there's also Vietnam ones. And the Vietnam ones basically like a band of brothers, really. Yeah.
Yeah. And would she find out some more about that, or anybody listening find out by calling the Bureau of Veterans Services?
They can call the Bureau of Veterans Services they could talk to the VA, call on the VA's number, and then they can get connected to the right people that have the answers out there, too. But Bureau of Veterans Services probably is a quicker answer to call.
All right. Thank you, Sally. Let's see. We've got time, I think, for one or two more, maybe. We'll go to Dwight calling from Pownell. Hi, Dwight. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And I appreciate all the comments, especially those coming from the officers there who are reflecting on our military experience since World War II. I couldn't agree more. But what I wanted to say was I was drafted and served in Vietnam. But when I came home, my experience was quite wonderful. I mean, I think we focus on some bad experiences, and I feel very badly about any veterans who had bad experiences. But there's been lots of research done that says most people were treated with respect. I was treated with tremendous respect. I came home on a weekend, and by the middle of the week, I was at a liberal arts college in Marietta, Ohio. And yes, it was an anti-war atmosphere, but they treated me with respect in the sense that they listened to what I had to say. And in fact, I got involved in politics, and they even elected me president of the student body. I went on to graduate school. I know the reason I got a graduate research scholarship was because I'd been a veteran. So I think our country kind of gets a bad rap on this. Again, I'm sorry for any veterans who are treated badly, but my experience was everyone was respectful, kind, and understanding. And I think I was treated the same way today that most returning veterans are treated now.
Dwight, I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear that that was your experience. And thank you for calling in. Okay, we have about a minute. I'm going to try to squeeze in one more call and go to Tom calling from Freeport. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Yes. My experience coming back, I think the only people that ever gave me a hard time were, I think were Secret Service for Nixon. Now, today, we didn't talk about anything about Vietnam. If the subject was brought up, I just changed the subject for the first 30 years or so. And then lately, I can't count the number of drinks that have been bought for me or even meals. They have, may I recommend... I heard somebody ask about places to go for group meetings, and the Vet Center is the best, and they're all over the state.
That's right. Thank you, Tom, for mentioning the Vet Center. I do appreciate it. Yeah. And so, Don, Krayshan, we have just a few seconds left. We mentioned that you're speaking tomorrow at 2 at the Maine Military Museum in South Portland, speaking again in April. And then are there any other talks?
Yes, I'm going to be speaking again in South Portland on the 29th at 2 p.m., as well as three sessions in Biddeford, one in our, at our church, Union Church in Biddeford, on the March 30th, Sunday, another one on Wednesday, April 30th at the Biddeford Pool Community Center, and a third at the library in Biddeford, the MacArthur Library, on Friday, May 2nd at 1 p.m. All Great. Of those are commemorate our Vietnam veterans.
We're out of time. Thank you so much, Don Krayshan, the author of Hovering in Harm's Way. Also with us, Major General Bill Libby, retired Adjutant General of the Maine National Guard, and Pete Ogden, Director of the Maine Armed Forces Museum. Today's sound engineer, Sandra Harris. Maine Calling, produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This is Maine Public Radio.